Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
I know, absolutely. And thank you so much for bringing your mug with you, boo.
Why would I not?
I don't know. I don't know. Yes. Who does that, right?
And hydration is very important, so cheers.
Looking kind of funky. Mm. I got to get my coloring right. I look a little blue here.
Mm-hmm.
You look absolutely striking. I went to get some feathers for my head. I couldn't find any feathers. I don't know what's going on here in San Diego.
I can always find some feathers for you.
Yeah, I can't find any feathers.
Mm-hmm. Any particular color?
Oh, I like a black, white, and red.
Black, white, and red. I'll see what I can find for you.
I'll see what you can find. I appreciate it. You are such a bright, beautiful woman. So what is going on there in Queensland, Australia?
Just finishing my note, yes.
Oh.
What's going on? We have a glorious...
A feather note. She's getting her grocery list.
There we go. All done.
All right. So, brains, we are here on the edge with Frances Cowell. That's the Australian pronunciation, as we would say, Cowhill, but they say Cowell. She's an amazing woman. And we, you know, are right in the same lane because we both love theater, theatrics, public speaking, personal development, growth, and the backstory, the human interest story. And, you know, her people were from Ireland, and the Mahoneys is an Irish name. So we've got so much in common. Plus, I love Australia. And check out the Red Hats. I'm going to ask her about the Red Hat Society. You are a member, aren't you, Frances?
I certainly am, April.
Okay, I want to ask you, let's start with that, because that's fun. You know, there's the Eastern Stars, and there's the Soropsimus, and the Rotary Club. But who are the Red Hat Ladies?
The Red Hat Ladies, and I did a bit of investigation just to make sure I had it right. The Red Hat Ladies was founded in 1997 by Sue Ellen Cooper in Fullerton, California, not far from you, April.
Right, right.
The idea is it's the place where there is fun after 50 for women.
Oh.
I belong to the local chapter, the Deception Bay Dazzlers, and our main mission is for fun, food, and friendships. That's it.
That's good. It's over
55, well, over 50, and we just join together, spend time in each other's company. We'll have morning teas. Food is a major thing, and dessert comes first. So that's a wonderful thing. It is a place where we are safe to just be ourselves and to enjoy company of other women who have brilliant backstories, who have so much to offer. And I joined it after leaving Soroptimists. It is something that is totally... I am there just for my enjoyment. There is nothing else.
Well, you know, the Soropsimus, baby, you better work, okay? Because they are into all kinds of philanthropic efforts. I know
the
San Diego chapter is really a powerful influence when it comes to human trafficking.
Yes, yes.
They're a big supporter of that. So you have to work with the Soropsimus. You got to do it.
And I did worked very hard. The one major thing that I was happy as a legacy from my presidency was that I had our club sponsor a creative industries bursary for young women. So that in their second and third year of uni study or college or whatever level of study they were doing, we raised funds to be able to offer them $1,000 as a bursary to help them put on a show, to help them develop whatever it was in terms of, we had a sculptor one year and we were able to support her in getting the right machinery available so that she could shape her figurines in the way that she wanted. It was absolutely fascinating.
I bet. And you know what else is fascinating? The work that you do with regards to theater. But dial back a little bit. Introduce yourself to my brains, okay? Because, again, you're at the place where the conversation is pointed. The guests are sharp and the responses are never dull, and we are doing way too much. I wore my red hat in honor of you. But you. Tell me a little bit about your backstory and how you show up in the world, Frances.
Okay. I suppose that I had a very happy childhood. I was... my mum was a war widow, which means my dad died from war wounds. He and she both served in the Second World War. And so happy childhood, lots of music, lots of smarts, you know, all of that sort of stuff. I suppose the story that becomes more relevant is after a marriage of 25 years, I had a devastating divorce and I was living away from Brisbane. I'd been away from Brisbane for 25 years or so. And I packed up my two teenage children and came back home to where my mum was and my family. And I'd been a deputy state manager of a Commonwealth government department. And I thought, it'd be easy enough for me to get a job. Well, that wasn't the case, was it? I was still looking for work quite some time. And I thought, well, okay, my confidence is now about zero. My self-esteem is in negative. So I called on... my academic background is in sociolinguistics, which is the study of language and society and communication and discourse and all of those sort of things. Mm. I had always had a love of theatre and performing. And then there was the idea of I was someone who was able to speak very, very well until I hit this crash point. So, okay, what I was doing then was planning how I was going to go for another job interview, how I was going to be able to talk about my theatre experience, how I was going to be able to get back into society, I guess. And over a period of probably 12 months, I did a lot of heart searching and developed some programs that worked for me and have been working for my clients ever since.
I missed something in there. So you went from your corporate government work into something that you loved. So you did a huge pivot and started now with coaching for public speaking. You started with that, correct?
That's right. Yes.
Did that in conjunction with your theater work?
My theatre work took second place, actually, after that. I still, you know, did a few things with community theatre and occasional performances and stuff. Mm-hmm. But that the theatre was always with me because in any coaching situation, we add a bit of theatre to it anyway. Because presentation...
everything is theatrics, okay? And everything is acting. You're putting on a show.
You're
like
performing.
Like sales, you know, you're selling yourself. Your product, your personality, your goals, your dreams, everything is a sales job. And I was president of Toastmasters International here in the U.S. I had a chapter, Precision Sound. And it was the greatest thing. What I really like about you versus, you know, some of the other things is that you're a great storyteller. And so, you know, when you tell stories, people don't understand that when you give a speech, you are telling a story. You have to introduce it. You have to teach exactly what it is. And then at the end, you have to recap and bring it, you know, bring a conclusion. But what I love about what you do is that you bring a sense of humor, a sense of humanity and balance. There's a change in voice inflection, your eyes, your presence, all of that is incorporated in what you do. How did you really master that?
What you need to do, and a lot of people feel uncomfortable, is that you start mastering standing in front of the mirror and talking to yourself.
Girl, I do that. Well, then hell, I should get an Academy Award. I talk to myself, you know, hey, April, what's happening? You know, talk to that board of directors in your head every damn day. So I should be great at it.
Exactly. But it is something, you know, the major thing that a lot of people have to overcome is the fear. So there's a whole range of things that we've got in terms of fear disruption and the top 10 fear busters. And we'll come back to that later. But when someone is fearful of public speaking and they're given this prospect of speaking in public, the fear starts straight away. And for me, that's where we have to start our journey. With my clients, if they're in that sort of frame, I will film them before we work. We do some stuff. A couple of hours later, I film them again, and they will see the difference. But I keep saying to people, if you're rehearsing should be that you are doing it to your phone for yourself and you replay it so that you are desensitizing yourself to the sound of your voice and to your face. It'll go, every time, don't do that.
So do you just work with theater people, or do you work with E-level and the C-level corporations? Because, you know, they've got an acting job sometimes and a
sales
pitch that they have to do.
And I have done a lot of corporate work in groups. My favorite, though, and my preference is to work with people who are really frightened. And we take enormous steps past into fear. And then my biggest buzz, April, is to see them, that in their eyes, they've got it.
Wow.
I can do this. My day is made. My day is made.
It is. So, it's, you know, it's like a budding lotus flower.
Oh, yes. Like
up out of their shell. Yes. I never had a problem with public speaking. I always, you know, kind of liked it. That's why I'm an orator, trained orator, in addition to a podcaster. But it was a little bit of a transition for me when I got into television. Well, you know, you're a little bit more critical of how you look, you know, the extra weight that it puts on you. But what I really realized really is it's the deliverable. People are not looking, they will overlook your minor flaws if you have content and you can keep their attention.
That's right. That's right. If it's going to be fun, you have to enjoy it. If it's going to be entertaining, you have to be aware of the message to the audience. But if it's going to be educational, it's got to be compelling. And you have to believe what you're saying.
What are three top tips that you give your people when they are, you know, branching out and cracking out of their shell?
Okay, top three tips. It's my magic three. Every time you get up to speak, it's know your why. Why are you getting up to speak? And that is because I want to tell people about stuff. Well, no, okay. It's got to take it one step further. Know why you are getting up to speak. Number two is get into your role. What is the role? As you mentioned before, April, what is your role? Are you the expert? Are you the salesperson? Are you someone who wants to convince them about this safety measure? Are you someone who wants to say, well, we've got some bad news about the sales reports this week, but I've got something to offer. So know your why, get into your role. And then the third bit that people don't consider as much as they should is to actually love your voice. Whatever voice you've been given, unless you want to go into several years of speech pathology and training, it's the one you've got. So make the best use of that as part of the instrument of delivering your message.
I couldn't agree more. Like I said, voice inflection, your tone, your edits, your pause, reducing the filler words, you know, like, whatever drives me crazy.
Me too. My kids hated me.
Parsnickety. I don't want to be parsnickety, but there is such a distraction when you've got you know, like, whatever. You know, what you do is you slow down.
Yes.
And you can make a mistake. Nobody knows what you're going to say, brains, until it comes out of your mouth.
Exactly right. And then equally, we have some fun with mouth exercises where you need to be able to articulate very well and stick out your tongue as far as it will go. The tongue is one of the most important parts of your
instrument. I'm trying to learn how to speak, not get a date.
Yes. One of my recent posts says, vroom your lips before you speak. So,
okay. So now that's good. Also, you sing. So you incorporate that, because I've checked you out now. But you sing. But voice exercise. Give me a couple voice exercises that people do or you do before you start to sing.
I will be very honest with you. As I was standing, finishing up my makeup, I was doing my me-me's. As something as corny as that. Me, 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 ma, 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 ma.
You're tuning your instrument.
And the exercises, it's really important. A lot of people ignore it, I think. It's very important that your mouth, The muscles in your mouth and your lips are all moist and flexible.
That's what he said. I'm sorry.
I'm single. I'll bring anything I can.
But serious stuff, you know, that's good because you are warming up your throat, but that's also right. Breathing from your diaphragm. And singing from your diaphragm. A lot of people like to sing from here and they can't hold a note in a paper bag.
No, that's right. Absolutely. And that the another fun one, and it's all about lips again. If when you hum, and you'll know this, April, but let's share it with your audience. When you hum, if you can make your lips vibrate when you're humming, your voice is being projected to the right place for good articulation and projection. So the fun part for me is having a group of middle-aged men standing up going, and you can see that they're trying to get, and it does take a little bit of practice, but once you've got it, as soon as you've got the vibration of your lips with the humming, if you open your mouth and start to speak, your voice is a different tone altogether.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to try that. Let's talk a little bit about that incorporated in theater work, because there is a lot of projection. I mean, sometimes you are doing theater work without a mic because you have the acoustics.
Yes, exactly.
And you want to take advantage of, you know, how that voice resonates to the naked ear.
Yes.
So you've done your warm up and you have done a killer show and you've done it for 5 nights straight. Mm-hmm. Now your voice is tired.
Yes.
What do you do to recover?
My favorite remedy, I suppose, is a simple lemon and honey, but equally
what a little
lemon and honey drink. Just a lemon and honey drink. No, what? Yeah. Of course. I'm keeping the level here. I've been swigging brandy. No, sorry. lemon and honey with a sprig of whatever other warming libation you would prefer.
I used to do that when I was a kid. My mother used to have a give me a little bit of brandy, but she put rock candy and lemon and it, or the honey, and it really coats the cords. You see people, I mean, I was traveling with my brother and he was in the music and entertainment industry and their voice is just raw. Someone told me you can get calluses on your vocal cords.
Yes, absolutely. And that to me is, we have to always remember that the instrument, all of your instrument, but this is the one that will make or break. So take care of it. Mm-hmm. I was a singer and I smoked at the same time.
Girl, I was going to ask you about that. You know, you see these rock stars, they got that brandy and they got that cigarette and then they go out there and smoke. And, you know, the mucus that creates there, you know, it's, and what goes down into the lungs, because you're really expanding them. It can be very dangerous.
Exactly. And I suppose the major thing in terms of theater work, a lot of people, not so many trained, I suppose, but in community theater, a lot of people don't realize or make the distinction between projection and volume. They are not the same thing.
Right.
Projection comes from your diaphragm and projecting the voice and the air out through the pipe. Volume is just making your vocal cords vibrate harder. And even if you are projecting well, your voice will be raw. So the idea is rest, lemon and honey with a swig of something, and ensure that, and don't whisper. Don't ever whisper. You are just making it worse.
Right. You know, I kind of like raspy voices, you know.
I love them, but.
But, you know, they're hard. Or you are from Ireland originally and Australia, and I bet you can act and have an English or an American accent.
I can have. Yes, if I try hard.
People do when they are trying to develop an accent.
To be able to develop a good accent, you have to have a good ear. so that what you hear, the differences, I mean, the differences between an American accent and an Australian accent and an English accent really is only a couple of vowels and maybe the intonation of R.
Okay,
in Australia, it's very flat.
And R in any language, in Spanish or whatever, it's always the rolling of the R.
That's right. And a ruh in French, that's, you know, right. Altogether different. So to be able to produce a good accent, for my, and this is in my opinion, you need to have a good ear to be able to make the distinctions first and then to be able to produce that that's different to your native sound mm-hmm. and to be able to produce it consistently.
Right, because, you know, in acting and theater, you've got dialogues, you've got, yes. you know, like a southern twang sometimes, or
yes.
it can be a lot. And it can be a maker or a breaker, you
That's
know.
That's right.
You cannot have someone from Australia do a hip-hop a hip-hop play and, you know, you don't know how to put some swagger into it. So it's a lot, but it's a lot of fun. Do you work with children?
I did, I don't anymore, but I did have a teaching, I was a teaching principal at a drama academy and I had 18 glorious months of teaching shy little kids and turning them into stars in their own lights. It was just magnificent, absolutely magnificent.
So when you go out and you speak yourself, what's your topics, what's your subjects?
My best topic, the one that I enjoy the most, is public speaking is the safest activity in the world.
Mm.
No one in the history of man, personkind, has ever had their death certificate listed as the cause of death in their death certificate as public speaking.
Right, right. But that's people's biggest fear. But a lot of times someone was telling me that it's psychosomatic because what they're not afraid of is really the audience, but it's more of being rejected. It's more yes. about people assuming that what you're going to say is silly or
yes.
that they're not laughing at you. Again, brains, they don't know what you're going to say until you actually say it.
Yes.
You said something that I want to springboard into. It's a great segue. You said that on your death certificate, it's not going to say that you die from public speaking.
That's right.
You're a caregiver as well.
Yes.
So yes, you have, you know, I've just concluded that.
Yes.
My mother has went on to a much more glorious place, but that caregiving girl ain't no joke.
No, absolutely not.
It is no everything. Joke. It takes, yep. but you know what? It was the greatest honor and privilege that I could ever have. Was to honor my mother and to take care of her until her dying day.
Yes. But,
you know, you got responsibility for the medication. You've got to change incognizance. You've got to make sure that the food is prepared. You got to make sure that you're on time. You want to keep that person happy. Sometimes you've got to lift them. Girl, I tell you, I feel so for people that don't have anyone.
Yes.
And friends, if you have a family member that's struggling, please go check in on them. Please go check in on
yes.
it because
yes.
it's such a sacrifice. Tell me a little bit about your caregiving experience and what you do.
It's sort of come, I have an adult daughter, early 20s, and while her physical care is not so intensive anymore, it's in terms of emotional, and we're talking about deep social anxiety, mental ill health, etc. And I find the major thing for me is maintaining an even keel and being able to respond in a calm and measured fashion when sometimes it's the end of the day and I don't know what I've got left in the tank.
Exactly.
Where I just
how do you allow yourself? Do you give yourself permission? I would feel guilty sometime, and then I say, "Oh hell no! I am going to sit down, and yep. I am going to take a break, or I'm going to take a bubble bath." And you know,
to me, that's essential. It's essential, April, that you slot even if it's 10 minutes to listen to a meditation. Of course, you want to check to make sure everything's safe and all of that. Close the door, and even give yourself a 10-minute bubble bath or a 10-minute meditation or listen to a favorite music where you are totally in your zone, no one else's. To me, that is absolutely essential. And of course, do I get it right all the time? Absolutely not. But you have to give yourself permission to be human as well.
That's right, because you're living for two people.
That's right.
That person is so dependent on you. My mother would call me in there, girl, to get the remote control, and it was within arm's length. Really? Yeah, really, princess? I just couldn't find it. You didn't even reach for it. You didn't even try. But, you know, again, like I said, I'm just glad that I have the bandwidth and the capacity to be able to stretch myself. You said mental health and et cetera.
Yes.
And when you said that, I want to kind of dial back. I want to open that up a little bit because I know that you don't feel this way because you have a daughter that's going through this or has been through this experience, but there's a shame associated with mental illness.
Well, of course there
and
is.
I want to, again, you know, I want to pull the curtain back on that because you can't help it.
No.
You know, some people can't see through their eyes. Some people can't, you have skin diseases, they have cancer, physical things that you can see. You can't see what's inside the mental psyche. And I know that it's one heck of a journey for you, even as a trained educator, to try to edit and filter and be compassionate and walk this walk. It's dangerous and it's scary and you never know what to expect.
Exactly. Absolutely. It's the invisibility that has made it easy for society to say that doesn't happen, or if you're weak if it happens, or whatever. And I don't understand that, in that, as you just said, if you have a physical visible disability or a less than ability, I hate the term disability mostly, but if there is something visible, okay, you get slotted into that box, okay, that you can't do this or you can't do that or you're limited in this. If it is invisible, then it is mental ill health, or it is some form of trauma that's within you. Why must people feel shamed by that? It is something that happens to, what is it, 5 in 10 people will experience some form in their life?
I tell you why. It's because, number one, people are too damn judgmental.
Yes.
You know, number two, they're fearful.
Yes.
They're fearful of the unknown. That could be the color of your skin, the texture of your hair, your country of origin, you know. And so now this is just another way to edit and filter and put you over here in this line instead of putting you in this line. It's hard to identify. You know, it's hard to reason with, but hell, so is math. And you just have you've got to try. You got to try. You have to ask questions and you have to be curious and you have to be patient. You know, can you imagine what's rattling around in the person's head that's going through this? They're running from something. They're uncertain. They're afraid, you know, and you're going to attack them. We need to be a little bit more patient.
And more open to the fact that we're all human beings. Mm-hmm. And the one word that jumped out for me in what you just said, April, was curious. I'm just curious to know what. Mm-hmm. The basic thing for me is the human dignity. Everybody deserves to be treated in a dignified fashion. Everybody. There is no one anywhere. And I suppose I would like to acknowledge my mum, who's been gone for quite some years now. She was the one who brought us all up. She was a widow bringing up 5 kids, and she said, do not ever think that you are better or worse than anybody. There is always someone that you can help. And we, at the time, the one thing that I do remember, April, was when we were little, we had outside toilets where the can man would come every week and he'd pick up the soil and would carry it out. And my mother heard some kids in the neighborhood poking fun at the can man, and she said, and she brought us all together, all the kids, she said, don't let me ever hear you saying rude and belittling statements to that man ever again. That man is doing a job that you aren't prepared to do, and he is earning a wage doing a job where he is has the dignity of labor. And my mum gave it all to us in a, you know, in a punch. And I've never forgotten that.
That's right.
Every person.
Because you don't know their story. You don't know their journey. You know, and that doesn't make them less than anything else.
Exactly. So,
but again, I believe a lot of that is fear.
Yes, absolutely. Fear of the unknown.
You know, just like fear of public speaking.
Yes.
But you got to feel the fear and do it anyway, brains. You got to get caught in your feelings. Ain't that right, Francis?
Exactly. And my point is, you've got to feel the fear and do it anyway, because you are robbing the world of the contribution you can make. Mm. There is a message that's burning inside you, and it doesn't have to be a world-shaking message, but the way you think about something and being able to articulate that to somebody else can be a major education for them. The ripple effect of what you do and say can be so important. You may not know it, but if you're frightened to share it, we'll never hear it.
And it'll change a young person's life.
Absolutely.
And an old person too. I mean, I can just imagine you working with a group of senior citizens doing a, you know, a Broadway show or a burlesque show or, you know, I can really see that, because you have the moxie that really is an influence and an impact on people. You're charming, you're funny, you can sing, you can do so many things. You're a caregiver. I think that you are a wonderful woman. I heard you can also sew.
Yes, I do.
Tell me about your sewing. Girl, I can't sew. I give that to my daughter and my husband. My husband can sew. Oh, yeah, my husband can get down. He taught my daughter how to sew, and she's a costume designer.
Absolutely magic. It started, once again, with my mom. I was about 10 years old. Yes, hello, Brace. Yep. I was about 10 years old, and we couldn't afford to buy new clothing. So we started out, I had a very inspired home ec teacher in primary school, which is your elementary school. And we designed all these clothes, and we held a little fashion show and stuff. And I've loved making clothes ever since. It is something that I really find. I'm going to do some after this, actually.
Really?
April. Yes. I could show you some of the fabrics that I have in mind.
Yes, let's see. What are you doing?
I'll go and get it for you. Won't be a moment.
All right.
Read my posters until I come back.
Okay, I can't zoom in. Oh, it says, unless you can be a bat cat, always be a bat cat. Wait a minute. Unless you can be bat cat, always be bat cat. Now, what the heck is she talking about? We're going to ask her. What is all this be a bat cat? What is that about? I don't get it.
That's in always be yourself. Can you see it closely enough? Hang on. Show it to you.
Oh,
okay. Closer.
Oh, okay.
It's just a meme.
Okay. I couldn't see the always be yourself.
Always be yourself. And then if you can't be yourself, be a bat cat. So step into that role.
All right.
Be confident. Be the person that you want to be.
Okay.
So
let me see your fabric. What are you making?
Sorry, what I'm going to be making a soft shirt. Can you see?
Oh, that's cute, with pink flamingos.
Yes, and it'll have a navy collar. It's just a plain shirt with a navy collar.
Really?
So I've been doing it, and my sister is really a whiz at it. She made my wedding dress, and she made hot. She was a bridal dressmaker.
What is coming back? I just did a show with one of my guests on crocheting.
Yes, my granny taught me how to do that.
Crocheting is coming back with a vengeance. That and knitting. I was never good at knitting, but I can do a crochet. And also quilt making.
Yes, all those things. I'm not saying that men should have been excluded, but they were at the time. Those are the female tribe stuff, those activities. And as I said, I'm doing this. I spent a lovely time with my sister yesterday where we were going through some of the patterns she's accumulated over 40 years. So I've chosen some patterns to go with it. And it was just a beautiful in the zone moment where we were chatting and looking through fabrics and looking through patterns. And that to me is part of the sewing circle or the knitting circle or the crochet circle.
It is. It's something that you do with your hand. It connects your eye, your hand, your brain. It's relaxing. It's creative.
That's
It's a lot to it, but it's hella expensive because I'm a crafter. I make jewelry and I paint and, you know, I do different things, and you will have just enough fabric you think, and you cut it too short. Or, you know, or you'll need 6 buttons and you got 4, now you got to change them all. You know, it's a lot. And I'll get there and I will get, you know, to 18 inches, knowing that my neck was more comfortable with a 20. And then I got to go buy a whole nother string of beads to get other, you know, 2 inches. So it can be expensive too.
True. But it's once you're in the zone and that creative zone where you're focusing totally on it, to me, that's worth $1 million every second that you spend. Because it is such a refreshing. Pardon?
When did you discover that you were creative?
Oh. Seriously? My creativity is more in the... It started in my voice and singing. And I was in grade 4 and I was new to the school. And Sister Ruth asked whether anyone knew how the tune of this new hymn that was being introduced. And I said, I do. I know it. I can remember the name of the hymn. Oh, breathe on me, breath of God. Oh, yeah. So that was my first public performance, April. I sang the first 3 verses. There are 4, but I sang the first 3 verses for my classmates at aged 8.
Wow.
And I've never shut up since then.
Well, I mean, it's good that you've been able to, you know, find your voice. But not only find it, use it, train it, and master it to help others.
And that's critical. Sorry, go on.
So fun. I want to ask you one other question.
Yes.
Do you write as well? Do you write screenplays? Do you, do you write plays, monologues?
I write humorous type blog things. There is a little book on my website if anyone's interested. It's called Public Speaking, Almost an Introduction.
You have it with you? You have a copy of it? Where?
No, not with me. It's just a little ebook, April. Just a little ebook.
There's nothing little about being published, baby. We don't do small.
Okay, I won't do small. I am working on a humorous book called Kitchen Olympics. During lockdown, a lot of people have been obviously confined to their homes, and with my somewhat clumsy approach to, like, I mean practically clumsy, where you'll pick up something and you'll drop it, or the pickles will go across the room. Anyway, I've put together a dozen of my Kitchen Olympic specials, and I am currently the land distance record holder for how far blueberries can roll down the hallway when you drop them.
We had to send the people from Guinness down there to record you. That is too funny. That is absolutely too funny. Well, you are brilliant, and you're multi-layered and so talented, and I'm so glad to have you here visiting with me. I've had a great time laughing and giggling with you, but the underlying message is, Brains, I want you to know your why, get into your story and your role, and love your voice. Because that's what Frances just taught us. Thank you, baby. Tell my Brains how to get in contact with you. I want them to follow you on Facebook. I want them to subscribe. Please. You know what, Mean? You should do some short stories.
We should.
Yeah.
Yes, we will.
Yeah.
So please, everyone, join me on Facebook. I'm under Frances Carl, C-A-H-I-L-L, and Frances with an E. I'd really like it if you check out the Polish Your Pitch page, but my main thing for you is I want you to join our club, which is the Speakeasy Club. You can get daily tips and tricks, and it's free to join. I want you to join us as the members of the club who are working on how to empower themselves so they can become captivating speakers, tell the story, kick away the barriers, and let the world see what you shine about. That's what I really want for you to do, is to join our club.
Well, Brains, hurry up. you better run. Don't walk. You better run.
And April, can I just say, if the first 10 people who meet the members, who join the members and say that they've come through you, April, I've got a special little goodie pack that will have one of these, which is the top 10 fear busters.
Oh, look at that.
It'll have a couple of little silly things, but this you can carry with you everywhere, like I carry my Hello Brains. Mine's a bit smaller.
Yeah, we got, you know, in Red Hats, we are doing way too much here, Brains. I hope you can keep up with us. I hope you can keep up. Francis, you are the best. Brains, I ask that you go in and join me for other edging conversations. Again, we're crocheting. We have some great musical artists. I'm always looking for people with great human interest stories. I like your backstory. Everybody's got a job, and I'm not a commercial. You know, I'm an influencer and an impactor, just like that one right over there. So, Brains, again, thank you so much for being here, and I love you and adore you. Will you come back?
I certainly will, with the lure of a short story reading. Yes.
Again, that's what he said. Bye, Brains.
Who's this team? April, who's this team? Thank you so much, April, and thank you so much, everyone, for listening. I look forward to seeing you on any platform you want, but let's all listen into April's next episode.
Yeah, and learn to speak.